Someone wiped my mouth and turned me over, laid me down. Still gasping, I opened my eyes. A medic stood beside the bed I lay on, the slimy green and black thing I had just vomited up, dangling from her hand. She stared at it, frowning.
"Looks good," she said, and then dropped it back into its dish. "That's unpleasant, citizen, I know," she said apparently to me. "Your throat will be raw for a few minutes. You..."
"Wuh." I tried to speak, but ended up retching again.
"You don't want to try to talk just yet," said the medic as someone, another medic, rolled me over again. "You had a close call. The pilot who brought you in got you just in time." "But she only had a basic emergency kit."
That stupid, stubborn sail pod. It must have been. She hadn't known I wasn't human, hadn't known saving me would be pointless.
"And she couldn't get you here right away," the medic continued. "We were worried for a little bit there, but the pulmonary correctives come all the way out, and the readings are good. Very minimal brain damage, if any, though you might not quite feel like yourself for a while."
That actually struck me as funny. But the retching had subsided again, and I didn't want to restart it, so I refused to acknowledge it. I kept my eyes closed and lay as still and quiet as I could, while I was rolled over and laid down again. If I opened my eyes, I would want to ask questions.
"She can have tea in 10 minutes, said the medic,
to whom I didn't know.
"Nothing solid just yet. Don't talk to her for the next 5.
"Yes, doctor."
Savarden. I opened my eyes, turned my head. Savarden stood at my bedside.
"Don't talk," she said to me. "The sudden decompression..."
"It will be easier for her to keep silent," admonished the medic, "if you don't talk to her."
Savarden fell silent, but I knew what the sudden decompression would have done to me. Dissolved gases in my blood would have come out of solution, suddenly and violently. Very possibly violently enough to kill me, even without the complete lack of air. But an increase in pressure, say being hauled back into atmosphere, would have sent those bubbles back into solution. The pressure difference between my lungs and the vacuum might have injured me. And I had been surprised when the tank blew and preoccupied with shooting anandamienized and might not have exhaled as I should have. And that had probably been the least of my injuries, given the explosion that had propelled me into the vacuum to begin with. A sail pod would have had only the most rudimentary means of treating such injuries, and the pilot had probably shoved me into a bare-bones version of a suspension pod to hold me until I could get to a medic.
"Good," said the medic. "Stay nice and quiet."
She left.
"How long?"
I asked Savarden, and didn't retch, though my throat was, as the medic had promised, still raw.
"About a week."
Savarden pulled a chair over and sat. "A week."
"I take it the palace is still here?" "Yes," said Savarden, as though my question hadn't been completely foolish but deserved an answer. "Thanks to you." "Security and the dock crew managed to seal off all the exits before any other Lords of the Roch made it out onto the hull. If you hadn't stopped the ones that did..."
She made an averting gesture.
2 gates have gone down.
Out of 12, that would be. That would cause enormous headaches both here and at the other ends of those gates. And any ships in them, when they'd gone, might or might not have made it to safety.
"Our side won, though. That's good."
"Our side." "I don't have a side in this," I said. From somewhere behind her, Savarden produced a bowl of tea. She kicked something below me, and the bed inclined itself slowly. She held the bowl to my mouth, and I took one small, cautious sip.
"It was wonderful."
Why, I asked when I'd taken another, am I here? I know why the idiot who hauled me in did it, but why did the medics bother with me? Savardin frowned.
You're serious.
I'm always serious.
That's true.
She stood, opened a drawer, and brought out a blanket, which she laid over me and carefully tucked around my bare hands. Before she could answer my question, Inspector Supervisor Skyot came partway into the room.
Medic said you were awake.
Why? I asked, and in answer to her puzzled expression, why am I awake? Why am I not dead?
Did you want to be?
Asked Inspector Supervisor Skyot, still looking as though she didn't understand me. No. Savardin offered the tea again, and I drank, a larger sip than before. No, I don't want to be dead, but it seems like a lot of work just to revive an ancillary. And cruel, to have brought me back, just so the Lord of the Roch could order me destroyed.
I don't think anyone here thinks of you as an ancillary, said Inspector Supervisor Skyot.
I looked at her. She seemed entirely serious. Skyot Hour, I began, flat-voiced.
Breck, said Savardin, before I could speak further, voice urgent. The doctor said lie still. Here, have more tea.
Why was Savardin even here? Why was Skyot? What have you done for Lieutenant On's sister? I asked, flat and harsh.
Offered her clientage, actually, which she wouldn't take. She was sure her sister held me in high regard, but she herself didn't know me and wasn't in need of my assistance. Very stubborn. She's in horticulture 2 gates away. She's doing fine. I keep an eye on her best I can from this distance.
Have you offered it to douse Kate?
This is about On, Inspector Supervisor Skyot said. I can see it is, but you won't come out and say it. And you're right. There was a great deal more that I could have said to her before she left, and I should have said it. You're the ancillary, the non-person, the piece of equipment. But to compare our actions, you loved her more than I ever did.
Compare our actions. It was like a slap. No, I said, glad of my expressionless ancillary's voice. You left her in doubt. I killed her. Silence. The Lord of the Roch doubted your loyalty, doubted our, and wanted Lieutenant On to spy on you. Lieutenant On refused and demanded to be interrogated to prove her loyalty. Of course, Anandermi and I didn't want that. She ordered me to shoot Lieutenant On. 3 seconds of silence. Savardin stood motionless. Then Skyot Hour said,
You didn't have a choice.
I don't know if I had a choice or not. I didn't think I did. But the next thing I did after I shot Lieutenant On was to shoot Anandermi and I. Which is why... I stopped, took a breath. Which is why she breached my heat shield. Skyot Hour, I have no right to be angry with you. I couldn't speak further.
You have every right to be as angry as you wish, said Inspector Supervisor Skyot. If I had understood when you first came here, I would have spoken differently to you.
And if I had wings, I'd be a sail pod.
Ifs and would-haves change nothing.
Tell the tyrant, I use the Orzian word, that I'll see her as soon as I can get out of bed. Savardin, bring me my clothes. Inspector Supervisor Skyot had, it turned out, actually come to see Douse Kate, who'd been badly injured in the last convulsions of Anandermi and I's struggle with herself. I walked slowly down a corridor lined with corrective swathed injured, lying on hastily made pallets, or encased in pods that would hold them suspended until the medics could get to them. Douse Kate lay on a bed in a room, unconscious, looking smaller and younger than I knew she was. "Will she be all right?" I asked Save Arden. Inspector Supervisor Skyot hadn't waited for me to make my slow way down the corridor. She'd had to get back to the docks.
"She will," answered the medic behind me. "You shouldn't be out of bed."
She was right. Just dressing, even with Savardin's assistance, had left me shaking with exhaustion. I had come down the corridor on sheer determination. Now I felt turning my head to answer the medic would take more strength than I had.
"You just grew a new pair of lungs," continued the medic, "among other things. You're not going to be walking around for a few days, at the very least."
Douse Kate breathed shallowly and regularly, looking so much like the tiny child I'd known. I wondered for a moment that I hadn't recognized her as soon as I'd seen her. "You need the space," I said, and then that clicked together with another bit of information. "You could have left me in suspension until you weren't so busy."
"The Lord of the Roch said she needed you, citizen. She wanted you up as soon as possible."
Faintly aggrieved, I thought. The medics, not unreasonably, would have prioritized patients differently, and she hadn't argued when I'd said she needed the space.
"You should go back to bed," said Save Arden. Solid Save Arden, the only thing between me and utter collapse just now.
I shouldn't have gotten up.
"No. She gets like this," said Save Arden, her voice apologetic.
"So I see."
"Let's go back to the room."
Save Arden sounded extremely patient and calm. It was a moment before I realized she was talking to me.
"You can get some rest. We can deal with the Lord of the Roch when you're good and ready."
"No," I repeated.
"Let's go."
With Save Arden's support, I made it out of medical, into a lift, and then what seemed to be an endless length of corridor, and then, suddenly, a tremendous open space. The ground stretching away, covered with glittering shards of colored glass that crunched and ground under my few steps.
"The fight spilled over into the temple," Save Arden said without my asking.
The main concourse, that's where I was. And all this broken glass, what was left of that room full of funeral offerings. Only a few people were out, mostly picking through the shards, looking, I supposed, for any large pieces that might be restored. Light brown jacketed security looked on.
"Communications were restored within a day or so, I think,"
Save Arden continued, guiding me around patches of glass toward the entrance to the palace proper.
"And then people started figuring out what was going on and picking sides. After a while, you couldn't not pick a side, not really. For a bit, we were afraid the military ships might attack each other, but there were only two on the other side, and they went for the gates instead and left the system."
"Civilian casualties?" I asked.
"There always are."
We crossed the last few meters of the glass-strewn concourse and entered the palace proper. An official stood there, her uniform jacket grimy, stained dark on one sleeve.
"Door one,"
she said, barely looking at us, sounding exhausted. Door one led to a lawn. On three sides, a vista of hills and trees, and above, a blue sky streaked with pearly clouds. The fourth side was beige wall, the grass gouged and torn at its base. A plain but thickly padded green chair sat a few meters in front of me.
Not for me, surely, but I didn't much care.
"I need to sit down."
"Yes,"
said Save Arden and walked me there and lowered me into it. I closed my eyes just for a moment. A child was speaking, a high, piping voice.
"The Presger,
had approached me before Gar said, the child.